All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you very much, and good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the USCDI Task Force. Our task force members and co-chairs have been super busy again over the past week. Anyways, we thank you for joining us today. I'm going to open up our meeting with roll call, and I'll start with our co-chairs. Stephen Lane.
Good morning.
Leslie Kelly Hall.
Good morning.
Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning.
Hans Budendijk.
Good morning.
Grace Cordovano.
Good morning.
Jim Jurgis.
Good morning.
Ken Kamoto. John Kilborn.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Clem McDonald. Aaron Neary. Brett Oliver.
Good morning.
Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning.
Abby Sears. Sasha Termont.
Good morning. Sorry about that.
Good morning. Sasha Termont.
And this is Sasha. Hello.
Hello. Andrew Truscott. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Dan Breen.
Cheryl's here twice.
Oh, sorry. Dan Breenman. And Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Good morning, Denise. Thank you very much. And I'll turn it over to our co-chairs, Stephen and Leslie.
Thank you so much, Mike. And thank you, everyone, for all of the great work that you've been doing, providing input in the documents and in emails and in conversations. I was actually out of pocket about half of last week. I excitedly got to go watch my daughter graduate from medical school, which was really wonderful. And Leslie and others really carried the water. And then Leslie and I burned a little midnight oil last night and tried to pull everything together. So we went through our Google Doc and resolved the vast majority of the comments that people have put in there, I think incorporating that. And our goal today is to go through and see if we can come to some consensus about the recommendations and some of the commentary that we've captured there in anticipation of preparing our comments for the next task force, or the next high-tech meeting. We have also gone through the notes from the last two meetings, and I think Al is doing a final polishing of those before those get posted. I anticipate those will be posted later today. Leslie, do you have anything else you want to add by way of intro?
No, I think we have a lot of work to do, so let's get going.
Terrific. Okay. So just as a reminder, we have this week and potentially next week, if we need it, to finalize our recommendations with regard to our task two, to then transmit to the HITAC. This is the task two that is before us, reviewing the OnDeck submission system and the suggested improvements, reviewing the evaluation criteria and process used to assign submissions to levels within the OnDeck system, and then the prioritization process used to select new data items for the draft of the next version. And of course, we have sort of expanded the scope of 2C to talk about prioritization within all of the levels or each of the levels to identify items of highest priority. And then once we finalize our recommendations to HITAC for June 9, we will, I think we can take a little bit of a break. We'll look at the calendar because we have then until the end of the summer, really, or the end of August, to put together our recommendations around version 3 priorities. So any question about why we're here or what we're up to? Hearing none and seeing no hands raised, we will power on. So I would suggest, if we can, Al, go ahead and bring up the Google Doc just to reorient people. The doc has been kind of cleaned up a bit. I want to back out just a little bit, Al, so that we can see all four columns. This doc has four columns. The first one focuses on our task 2A and the recommendations for improvements to the OnDeck system. We went through those pretty thoroughly last meeting, I think finalizing and approving the ones that we had there. And then Al has started to draft our recommendations document for the HITAC, and he put little check marks next to the ones that he had captured. I don't think we have any, or Leslie and I did not hear about any further suggestions or changes to those, so I think those are pretty well nailed at this point. There was one comment, I think came from Mark, that, lost the comment. Mark suggested that, it's because I incorporated that, that's why. Mark suggested that that people, submitters could potentially sign up for email alerts when comments were received on their submission. I actually get email alerts when things are done to my submission, but I don't think it's so much when comments are submitted as when ONC has issues with it. I can't remember. Al, can you comment on the email functionality within OnDeck and how it alerts submitters to comments and or changes?
Sure. Not only do you get the emails around your submission itself, but when comments are put on that page that's then published, if you put in a submission and we publish it, and somebody comes in on that particular data element and comments on it, you do get an email notification. Mark's example with the STOH submissions from Gravity, a lot of the comments that came in on the USCDI main page and not on his individual submission pages, and so he may not have gotten all of the notifications. But the system is designed to notify you of comments or additional information needed posted to that particular submitted data element.
Actually, now I did find Mark's comment. It wasn't resolved. You have to scroll down to the bottom of this to see it. It was a comment on our recommendation to allow a submitter to easily see when others have submitted the same, I'll say, or a similar element.
Which column? We're talking about
We're in column one, down near the bottom in the section called Data Class Element. And Mark's comment was, could this include signing up for email alerts? So email alerts for when a submitter submits a same or similar element. So I will, if nobody objects, add Mark's suggestion here. And I'll put it in bold, Al, so that you can find it to incorporate into the recommendation.
I have it on the screen, right? Are you guys
You do. You absolutely do, yes.
And then, Stephen, up above in this column, we also had a bold comment from last
week. We'll go back to that. I wanted to cover this one first. Okay. So just in terms of Mark's comment here, does anybody have any objection to these changes I'm suggesting in bold? Go down a little bit, Al. Go back down to where we were, the data class element section. Okay. So there it is. Okay. So just adding that based on Mark's suggestion. All good? Thumbs up? Terrific. Thank
Thumbs
you.
Up.
All right. Then let's scroll back up. There's another bold comment. This actually came from a comment. I forget whose it was. I'm sorry. But it was a suggestion that as part of the periodic review of OnDeck, ONC should identify gaps in the current USCDI and encourage or support submissions by stakeholders to close them. And I think this is an acknowledgement of the fact that ONC does this and has identified, at least in our first cycle, gaps, but poor Al had to do submissions for closing those gaps. Or he asked me, in the case of my submissions, to do one more because they had identified a gap. So I think in general, this is a good practice, and I think in general, it would be better to have community stakeholders make the submissions as opposed to ONC making them themselves. So proposing this as an add to our Task 1A. Any objections? You're good with that, Al?
Nope. Sure.
Okay, good. And then at the very bottom of the same column, Al added some clarification in yellow text that about the link embedding, and I think we talked about that last time. So I think column one, which is our task 2A recommendations, is done, and I'm hoping we will leave that there and move on. All right?
So Stephen, before we do, I just wanted to ask that the reason that I put this comment in there is to suggest we consider not advancing that particular recommendation.
Because it's not needed. Okay.
Yeah.
There's more. You mean the embedded links piece, not the patient stories piece?
Yeah.
Good. I'm good with that. Let's get rid of that text right there about the embedded links. Going, gone. Okay. Thank you, Al. Okay. So back to the top of the spreadsheet, reminding everyone that we have four columns, three for our tasks 2A, B, and C, and one for task 3. We did move some things over into the rightmost column for task 3, figuring that we have plenty of time to address that. I think our goal in trying to get task 2 done and in early was primarily to be able to impact the publication that Al and the team are preparing for July, when they actually publish the final version 2, as well as the guidance for the version 3 submission cycle, which will include an articulation of the any changes to the evaluation and prioritization criteria. And they may or may not have time to instantiate our task 2A recommendations. Some of these are process changes. But I think that getting these recommendations in now is a good thing. So we are now, in the absence of comments or hands raised, we'll move on to column 2, task 2B, and try to get through that. We made, Leslie and I made a number of minor changes, which are in bold for our attention. And what I'd like to do is kind of go through column 2 and see if we can reach consensus on all of this. We made a first pass at this last time, but again, some changes. So at the top, really diving right into the meat of the matter here, we've been talking a lot about majority versus minority use cases. And ONC, Al clarified for us that their intention in their previously published leveling criteria was really to keep USCDI focused on use cases that apply to the majority of patients and the majority of users of systems. The thought being that the USCDI, of course, is something that we point to. It goes into SVAP and then into the certification process. So every certified health IT system needs to be able to manage this data. And if we require every small certified EHR to manage data related to rare or specialized use cases, we run the risk of slowing down EHR development, distracting developers, and forcing them to build things that that are not what their users are asking for. I mean, if you're providing an EHR to a small office practice, having detailed data fields to support transplant use cases is probably not what you need. And if we create those in USCDI, move them on to SVAP and certification, that potentially does a disservice to our industry and the users of health IT products. So, and yet, we are very interested in supporting the disenfranchised, supporting minority use cases where and when we can. So this is how Leslie and I propose to tackle this idea. ONC should support minority use cases where possible. When considering minority use cases, evaluation should include identification of where the use case can be supported with an existing or compatible mature data elements and classes, and provide direction to stakeholders to support implementation and use. For example, specifying what note type should be used for exchanging coroner's reports, organ transplant harvest reports, et cetera. So the idea here is not to completely ignore minority uses or minority stakeholders, but rather to identify and highlight their needs and see if we can provide guidance to developers and implementers and users that would help them to be able to use the tools that are appropriately in USCDI to support their needs. I know it's a small gesture, perhaps. It's not the same as sort of saying, well, now USCDI is going to be a whole new thing. But I think it's a way to get at what I think a lot of us have been struggling with. So I want to throw that open to discussion.
And I think that the big point that this came from was Clem pushing us to say, wait a minute, there is some low-hanging fruit, and where it is appropriate to repurpose, for especially for minority use cases, let's look at that. And so this gives a mechanism to make sure that those on the fringe aren't going to be forever on the fringe. Sasha has her hand up. Sasha?
Thanks. So it was really helpful, Stephen, when you outlined some of the commentary or context behind this recommendation. I didn't glean that from reading over it, and in fact had some of the concerns that I think your commentary mitigated around how it would be handled in certification and the impact on products that, you know, weren't intended for that use case. Could we put some of the commentary and background into this or below it for reference so that we know that this is sort of with the framing statement that USCDI is intended to be a general use case that would be supported in every EHR, and then sort of the recommendation on existing and compatible standards is intended to, you know, not impose specialty product requirements on every EHR?
Sure. And Sasha, you did include a nice comment on this one, and I'll just sort of pull it over here so people can see it without us having to scroll over. Do you want to say anything more about this?
Sure. So I think my fear is just that the certification process today is all or nothing. And I don't want to see there be a situation where a dermatology EHR or a nephrology EHR has other requirements that they look at and say, wow, now there's stuff in USCDI that's really not applicable to my user's use case and I can't achieve certification, or I have to invest in a lot of features that, you know, aren't applicable to my clients. And it seems like either we'll need to specify domains for certification to say when certain things are and are not applicable, like we do today on hospital versus ambulatory data requirements in some cases, or we would need the context that you gave verbally to say that USCDI is intended to be broadly applicable, required for every product, and that we're picking things with that mindset, if that makes sense.
So I know that there's a counter argument coming. Come on, Mark, do you want to lay it on first, or do you want to jump in here?
before that, I'd also like to add that, you know, we're also talking about the cadence of what in means in the USCDI, right? So you've got on deck, comment phase, level one, level two, task force recommendation, draft, and then final. And that process can drive new work in maturity of a particular standard. So the on deck is that nest, and incubation period is quite long. And so with the kind of direction that this might indicate, we have a chance to have the stars align with the standards and the minority use cases, but to try to go to the low-hanging fruit first. Hans has a comment.
I don't know, Leslie. I'm sure Mark will. I think it depends on the use case. In some cases, the sort of foreshadowing that OnDeck replies might be helpful, But in other cases, I think there are going to be fundamentally data elements that certain systems don't need to capture. They might need to still be able to view them when other systems send them along. But I do think there will be some where we're just going to say, this is never going to be the priority for that system.
I think you're right. And I think the emphasis is on interoperable and viewable rather than collection.
Maybe we need to specify that because that's not how certification is today. Today, certification says anything in USCDI, every product has to both capture and send and view.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Hans, your hand is up.
Yes, I have. I want to build on that a little bit further and react to a comment Leslie made. Maybe starting with that one. Completely agreed that USCDI, when we use that term, it's not always clear what part do we talk about, in the process or in the publication. So wherever possible, we can say is that should it be in USCDI. Most of the time, I think we are going to be talking here in a publication at some point in time. But that does not mean is that it could not be in the process with different variations in criteria and otherwise. So I think that's very important to keep in mind. The first line that you're modifying here is that that's currently how the USCDI is being presented and as Sasha describes how it's being implied. To be certified, you must support all of USCDI. And I think what part of this is that we want to clarify that we want recognize is that that's what it is today, but we think that that needs to be more stratified. I think we have had conversations earlier around stratification as well. Do all systems need to support everything of USCDI in certain forms? So if we are saying that are intended to be broadly applicable to all EHRs, probably we mean HIT because it goes beyond EHRs as USCDI is being defined. The second part is that I think we want to acknowledge that that's today, but we do not necessarily want to say that's what it should be long term. So I think the impression this is giving is too strongly that we suggest that it should stay that way. I think we are, that would be more accurate because that then I think it flows better with the rest. That we would like to recognize that you can't do that if we move forward and it gets bigger. You cannot ask everybody to support all of USCDI.
Abby?
Yeah, this feels a little, do we have an example where we, of a data element that we think that it wouldn't work for what we're actually saying? Is there an example or is this, or are we speaking about the hypothetical? Because if there's an example, I'd love to pull that thread and see, does it or does it not work? Because as I think about the types of data elements that we would be interested in and around equity issues, which is a lot of what we're talking about here and why I'm really asking for a different process to go a little bit faster, whether you're a nephrologist or I don't know, an endocrinologist or, you know, any, I'm thinking about just different, whether in your long-term care, you're going to want those data elements because you're going to want to be able to sort and do research and to understand based off of social determinants of health if the care is actually different. So I guess I'm looking for, is there an example of a use case where you think this won't work? Because otherwise, I'm not sure I see the point of view, but I want to hear it. I just need to understand if you could give me an example, because otherwise I'm just not seeing it.
I'll take a stab. I'm not sure I fully understand your question, but I think this transplant example is a good one. You know, a couple of years ago with the leaders of the prior USCDI task force, I met with the representatives of the transplant community, and they were preparing requests for key data elements that they feel would be helpful to support their, you know, very important use case of identifying, you know, patients who, you know, are in a position to transplant an organ, identify those who need the organ, and, you know, connect the dots and make that all happen very quickly. clearly, I don't know, I don't have their request in front of me, but I imagine there's a data field that says, patient is brain dead and organs are available for harvest. Let's just say there is. That's a pretty minority use case, right? And not one that your average, small office practice EHR necessarily needs to support, the access, exchange, and use of that data element. But, as we noted here, an organ transplant harvest report is probably somewhere in their recommendations or request, and that could fit into a notes field that is applicable. So I think and we've had these conversations before, we've talked about coroner's reports, we should be able to move around coroner's reports. Well, yeah, you can. You just have to know where to put it. And if ONC could provide that guidance, then everyone could say, we're not going to have a special data element for coroner's reports. It's not a special note type. We're not going to ask LIFE to provide it. But here's where it fits to support this, relatively rare use case. So I don't know if that gets at your question.
Yeah, it actually did. And both Hans and Sasha gave examples, and that's what I needed to see. So my suggestion that I put in the chat was, what if we narrowed this? Because I'm misreading this, but a lot of this is about some of the concern around some of the equity issues, right? As I recall from the last task force meetings. And if that's the case,
it's also
then maybe
any
we
minority
narrow the language.
Use case.
Yeah,
so
right.
It's not just
right.
Any minority use case. So it could be data underserved. Okay. It could be medically underserved. It could be a complex and unique case. A small population with a high mortality rate when the data's not there. It's any smaller use case, as Stephen explained.
Well, then I wonder if we narrowed the language so that it doesn't hit on what Sasha and Hans are saying. I wonder if that would actually help alleviate some of the concerns, because I see the point now.
So the recommendation that Hans has just put in the chat is, we would, USCDI should enable stratification of data classes elements where not all HIT needs to support a certain aspect. So that gets to sort of the balance. How do you balance this need?
And Hans, you're suggesting that goes in that commentary as opposed to the suggestion, or in the suggestion?
I think it's ultimately a recommendation that we need to look for stratification. And I'm not sure that we have the answer on how best to do it, but we need to start to look at enabling that so there's more clarity what the expectations are.
Hans, this is Howard. Can I ask you about that recommendation? Regarding stratification, are you asking for a recommendation to allow partial adoption of the USCDI version?
Correct. In other words, you have HIT that supports this. If you look at the larger the organization is that has HIT, you'll see that it's typically made up of multiple systems from different parties providing more specialized capabilities. Each of those systems is serving a subset of the data that is relevant and that we are going to be looking at today or tomorrow. And therefore, asking every one of those HIT to effectively be able to support everything is not helpful. On the other hand, is that for what they do support, where they do focus, that's where they should support, and that's where we expect them to support the data in line with how the USCDI and the supporting standards do it. It's a matter of HIT is not a monolithic thing. It is a very configurable environment, each one playing their part to their strength, part of the data. And that's what we're trying to achieve, so that USCDI is not assumed to be done by everybody because that overlaps unnecessarily. But where they do, please support standards.
So I tried to, if you scroll up a little bit, Al, you can see how I've tried to capture this in a sort of softened way. ONC should explore how USCDI could enable stratification of data classes elements so that not all certified HIT products need to support certain data classes. Not sure. I think that's what you're saying, Hans. I mean, we're not going to be able to nail this, you know, in this cycle, but I think putting this out as a desirable future direction.
And perhaps is that if you change the word needs to is required?
And I would suggest, I think to capture Hans' intent, changing the word certain to all, I think was going to, it, correct me if I'm wrong, Hans, but I think that would capture your intent.
Correct. Yeah.
Okay.
Denise, a lot of hands are going up and coming down. I'm impressed by that dynamic. Hold on just a sec, Mark. Denise, do you want to chime in?
Yes. I just want to say I concur with Hans. I fully endorse what he's suggesting. I really think from a provider organization perspective, when a provider organization is trying to find products that meet needs and that are interoperable, having this stratification would be really helpful because we don't just buy one monolithic system that's going to support all of USCDI. You know, there's parts and pieces that work together, you know, depending on what the specialization is. And so I fully endorse that suggestion.
Mark, did you want to chime in?
I just dropped it in the box. Suggesting adding after support all data to say support all data where not needed. In other words, this is a focused recommendation. It's not a general statement that we're now sort of slicing and dicing USCDI.
Okay. Tried to capture that. No hands up. I'll take that as a consensus. We will go down to lower in the second column. And Al, you can zoom in a little bit just to make this a little bit more readable to folks on the screen. Let's just keep the first three columns maybe. Okay, so under periodic review, we just made some tweaks based on our discussion. It now reads ONC should review all items submitted to OnDeck annually or preferably semi-annually to validate current level and priority based on the latest information regarding maturity, submitted comments, and current criteria. So I don't think that's a substantive change, but hopefully some clearer language. Periodic review of OnDeck should identify opportunities for advancement of data classes and elements between levels. To me, that sort of went without saying, but somebody said it, so we included that. And that was the only other change that we put into column two based on the comments and feedback that we had received. Anyone have any problem with that? If not, Al, I think column two representing our task 2B recommendations is ready to go. Again, my goal here is for us to not have to meet next week and for Leslie and me to spend the time with Al working on the final recommendations or drafting the recommendations and slides for our review the subsequent week. So moving on to column three, our task 2C, we can probably zoom in even a little more to make it even more readable. I think here again, we're going into the meat the hamburger we're trying to make of the discussions that we've been having. So I'll just read this aloud so it can sink in for people. When prioritizing items within levels, ONC, so this is within levels, not just only within level two, ONC should separately assess technical maturity, for example, based on the existence of vocabulary, semantic standards, structural syntax standards, implementation guides, testing, implementation and use, and priority, for example, based on mitigating health inequities or disparities, responding to the needs of underserved stakeholders, and addressing public health and other identified priority use cases. So this is a long sentence, which is, attempts to capture a lot of discussion about how we as a task force differentiate in our minds maturity and priority. So I want to kind of pause here and give people a chance to respond. We have included some commentary below, which came from a number of you. The first one, maturity, content, and transport is a basic, very important factor, and the task force agrees with the ONC maturity levels to clearly assess and identify a data class element's maturity at the time it is added to a published US CDI version. Other priorities are important as well, and they too should be considered and balanced along with maturity in assessing overall whether a data class or element should be added to US CDI. And to differentiate this sort of what is US CDI, I'm gonna sort of add some extra words to a published version of US CDI, because again, I think one of the things we're gonna get at, and we'll get down to it here, is the idea that there should be different criteria for putting something in a draft version of US CDI, which is meant to stimulate discussion and activity within the industry, as opposed to putting it into a final published version of US CDI, which is intended to go on to SFAP and certification requirements. And then inclusion of immature, sorry, oh, hands up. Good, thanks.
Hands up, Michelle, and then Mark. Michelle?
Oh, hi, thanks, Stephen. I didn't know if you were going to keep going through this stuff, but I just wanted to really support this use case of having both prioritization for technical and the priority need. I mean, I think if we hadn't done that, for example, this time around, maybe some of the social and demographic stuff wasn't quite ready in terms of a technical maturity, but it's such a high priority for the country that I think we need to be pushing some of those things. And other things will come up, you know. Things have been needed for COVID. Things may be needed in the future. And so I just think that it's really important to separate both of them so that we always have high priority items. And by the way, sometimes it is only by putting them on the formally published US CDI that actually gets organizations to comply. We see this time and time again in CMS where really people don't necessarily actually make the investments until there's a formal regulation that says you have to do it. And I'm sorry to say that, but that is really just the way that works. And so I think both of these have to be in place. So I just wanted to be supportive for having both.
Thanks for those comments, Michelle. And I think that really the key is we're trying to thread a needle here. You know, we're trying to describe a balanced approach that we encourage ONC to take that takes all of this into account. I think drawing a bright line is not what we are trying to do here. So, Mark, go ahead.
Thanks. I dropped my thought in the chat. I think the spirit of the recommendation is broader than just within levels, and so I just made that point.
Leslie, since I'm not monitoring the chat as thoroughly as I can, if you're finding text in there that you think needs to be copied and pasted into the document, please do so, and then show that okay. You know, bring that to our attention so we can discuss it. I want to go on in the commentary. That is to say, we received feedback that inclusion of immature or incompletely specified data classes or elements in US CDI can have multiple effects. And then there were a few examples provided. If there's poor specification, then the certification and SFAP process can limit and slow the ability to iterate from a poor specification to a better specification because developers and users get locked in to something that was put in before it was fully baked. If there's no specification at all, then that can cause implementers to delay adopting that version of USCDI, either through the SFAP or when they're required to for certification. And here again, sort of potentially put brakes on the industry and its overall advancement. And if there's no specification, different implementers can approach this in varied ways. We certainly see this all the time. And even though messages may be flowing, the goal of semantic interoperability is not met. So I think these were some thoughts as to why holding out for more complete and mature technical specification is advantageous. But obviously, as we keep trying to emphasize, that needs to be balanced. And I think, Michelle, you made a really good point that there are folks, you know, probably both in the implementer or HIT community and in the end user community that simply won't bother to do something until, you know, they're absolutely required to. So that makes the argument for sometimes putting things in that are going to be challenging for some.
So Stephen, is this a recommendation? I don't see this as an actual recommendation. It seems like more of a comment.
So the recommendation is at the top. The commentary follows in italics. So scroll back up to the recommendation.
Got it.
And this has to do with really just capturing all of our extensive discussion about technical maturity and differentiating it from priority. And I'm not sure that we've called out clearly enough, or let's keep going here, that what we want is for ONC to identify these priority items within each level. And I think we say that top, when prioritizing items within levels, ONC should assess these things independently. I guess what I still think we may need here is this notion of an asterisk, that this item within this level has been identified as a priority item for any number of reasons, and therefore call it out. But I actually do think that we capture that. So let's keep going down through column three. And I don't think we did these in detail last time, so I'd like to continue on as we are one by one, even though they're not in bold. Items that are identified as high priority but of insufficient technical maturity for inclusion in USCDI should be communicated to the standards community for expedited work and to stakeholders for consideration for pilot use and iterative deployment independent of inclusion in SFAP or requirement by the certification process. I think this is what I was just getting at, this notion that these priority items need to be flagged, informing the industry that they need love and that we want them to move forward. Now, if it's in level two, that means we want them to be included in version next. If they're down in comment or level one, that means, you know, get to work and mature these so that at the next periodic review, we can move them to the next level. No hands up. I can see Mark's wheels spinning, so we'll just keep going. Clarify that a published draft USCDI version may include classes elements that may not be quite ready for inclusion in the next version, the next published version, final published version, and that would be included if certain criteria are met, for example, final publication of an implementation guide prior to advancement to the next version. Those items that are not able to advance should be carried forward for potential inclusion in the subsequent version. So here again, this is trying to capture this concept that we have different criteria for putting something in a draft than in a final published version. The drafts really are can be used to be aspirational, to trigger the kinds of discussions that we saw and we sponsored between HL7 and ONC. And that this should be an intended part of the process. I'm feeling really good about our work, Leslie. Nobody's raising their hands to complain. Maybe the bomb is coming under my bus here. going on, advancement to USCDI to a final published version of USCDI requires a minimum degree of technical maturity readiness. Again, we're not drawing a bright line. In particular, published implementation guidance are important for scalable national deployment of a concept, I think it's a data element or class. All right. So we're really sort of throwing our weight behind this, the need for implementation guidance. I think, did Ricky end up joining us? He did. You following, Ricky? Do you like this?
Yes. Ricky, yeah, that looks good. Sorry, I was muted.
That's all good. Thank you. Just want to expand the dialogue here. Clarify that the requirement for a data class element within ONC certification and or a CMS initiative is not an absolute requirement for inclusion in US CDI. This gets to a thorny point that Hans has been raising, which we'll get to as soon as I read the last bullet here. Continue to identify and prioritize data elements that are generated automatically and or collected and exist routinely within HIT systems. And this is Clem's ongoing point that we should not be stingy and things that are easy should be included when appropriate. So this is about identifying and prioritizing those. So Hans, maybe this is a good time. So that second to last bullet, the whole issue of what happens if we include an element in US CDI and how that could have a potential impact on developers of certified HIT and their ability to embrace an SVAP and be able to continue to keep their system certified. Do you want to lay out the challenge as you see it, Hans?
Sure, and probably go back and forth with Sasha on this to make sure we covered it. But the challenge is that it you have to go back from a what is a certified software, what are they supposed to adhere to, and how does that interplay between the certification rule, what's in there, and what's in ASVAB, the annual enhancement that can increase the version of a standard that is referenced in certification rule. So it's that interplay that happens there. So it gets a little bit complicated, and we're all still trying to learn how it all works. But in the end, what we think and understand and how we see it unfold right now is that if you have US CDI that starts to include data for which the supporting standards that might exist somewhere but are not in regulations yet, then ASVAB cannot technically right now pick them up. That means is that we have to be very careful that US CDI might have some standards, but they're not eligible for ASVAB. So how do we deal with that? What's the clarification for it? But the thing is that we do need to then, as part of ASVAB, we need to adopt that. We need to take that on. We need to have a variety of things there. So we're not sure is that a standard that's going to be recognized? Are there different variations of it? So we just have to be very careful that US CDI cannot move too far ahead of what really ASVAB is allowed to do. While when you get to certification, it can do a lot more. Because at that point in time, when you upgrade certification, new standards, new things can come into play that ASVAB cannot do. So that's where we are trying to figure out and understand how much can US CDI be ahead where it is relying on certain capabilities that ASVAB cannot do, but that is then causing certification challenges on how do we do that? Because to certify, we need to do that to support US CDI with the existing standards that are there. That's what the requirement is right now. So that either requires a lot of clarification by ONC on how that would play, or we just need to make sure is that whatever we do with US CDI, while we are still in an ASVAB cycle only, not certification, large uptick, is that what can we do to make sure that we keep that in sync? That's really where the problem on this point spins around. And Sasha, you might have a couple of other examples around that.
Well, I agree, Hans, and I did think maybe an example might help folks who are not as in the certification and SVAP leads as we are. This is a totally hypothetical example, but let's say we wanted to add a data class like occupation, for example, and the standards for expressing data class that have the, you know, requisite published implementation guides and maturity and so forth are for FHIR version 5. If FHIR version 5 is not itself in certification, which it isn't today, then there's no SVAP process that could incorporate that and that standard into USCDI certification. And we'd have to wait until the prerequisite underlying standard of FHIR version 5 was incorporated into certification before it could have that USCDI dependency. So what we're saying here is we're either constrained by the certification standards to pick things that are expressible in, you know, CCA 2.1 or FHIR R4, or we need to advance the underlying certification standards in parallel or prior to including additional data elements. Does that example maybe help illustrate the problem Hans had brought up?
So, Sasha, this is Al. I think the example, having an example is good, but I'm a little uncertain about how valid that particular example is, because the content of USCDI is going to be a vocabulary standard, not an exchange standard. And so with the example of work information, you know, there's an existing new data standard called Occupational Data for Health. It has a FHIR standard. I don't know if it's going to be a FHIR 5 or a 4 standard, but that's the exchange standard. The underlying vocabulary standard for occupational data for health is just that, as is a vocabulary standard, and that vocabulary standard is not something that would need to go through SVAP.
The question then, Al, is that if USCDI is vocabulary, but in the rules for supporting ASVAB and USCDI, the other standards, CCDA and UFI, US Core, are being referenced, then at that point in time, we still end up being required using those two standards today to support all of USCDI. So it's a combination of stratification that helps, because that could clarify where certain things are not. It might be at times is that maybe it is CCDA, if you can do that, or if you FHIR US Core, they're not necessarily all in sync at all times. It starts to just make it very complicated to understand our certification requirement is support USCDI with CCDA version 2.1 plus companion guide and with FHIR US Core. That's the requirement from certification perspective. So right. It might not be in USCDI, but effectively ASVAB is going to tie it all together.
Yeah. So, yes. Hans, we had in the recommendation in task 3, which is not up there, that we wanted to develop to clarify the relationship between USCDI, designated record set, EHI, SVAP, inflow blocking, and recommendations for standards to achieve interoperability and access with an emphasis on achieving data parity for all. It's not just the relationship, but it's the uneven cadence, right, of each of these structures don't necessarily have an aligned cadence. And that brings in itself confusion.
Correct, because that
so
makes
that,
these kind
the
of...
relationship Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'm going to include that idea of cadence in where we're asking for guidance under task 3, and then Stephen, go. Let's continue on with the 2C column.
Yeah, and the red text that I brought over from the task 3 column was sort of my way of thinking about this. I have to admit that I don't completely follow the issue that Hans and Sasha are raising. I think I get it at a superficial level. I want to be sure, though, Al, that you understand it, because it's clearly important to them. They're the ones, you know, who are kind of here representing vendors and developers of certified HIT who have had to go through the certification process. So I think the fact that they are both, you know, clearly concerned about this issue to me at least, means that it's a real issue that needs to be addressed. So do you feel, Al, that you get it? And Sasha and Hans, do you feel that Al gets it? and do you think that we've captured this sufficiently in our recommendation, or is there still a gap here?
I think we collectively are still all trying to get it exactly, and that we see some things there that we are concerned about based on past experience, what we've seen over the last 10 years with meaningful use promoting interoperability. I think there's more conversation that's needed to help clarify. So I think the key of the recommendation should be is that, as Leslie also was pointing back to the other part, we really need to work on that clarification. How is it all tied together? How does it work? So we really understand that we need to push USCDI forward, but we cannot do it too slowly and exclude things that could be easy things to put in. We also cannot include too much, because then that is going to make it much more difficult to get adoption in the timelines that we all think it can happen, because of the ramifications of what is needed to actually make it happen from a certification, ASVAB, adoption of standards perspective. So it is a very intricate balance that we're trying to strike here, that we want to nudge along and push along as fast as we can.
So
thanks.
I wanted the way that I see this, so to make sure that people understand that I think I get it, at least, there's two parts to this. One, the process that we use to add a data element to USCDI is based on the feasibility of implementation in CCDA and US Core. That's the homework that we do to make sure that what we're going to put in or thinking about putting in can be implemented in these exchange standards. That's one piece of it. The SFAP, I think, is a little bit of a different piece. And I think hypothetically, I can't come up with an example, but hypothetically, we could create a version of USCDI that has some new data elements in it that the community, through the SFAP comment process, feels like makes USCDI version X unimplementable and therefore should not be SFAP'd. Those two pieces of that could be related, but our diligence in adding a new data element that can be implemented should take care of the comments during the SFAP comment process. But I understand the point of view that a new data element should be implementable. Period. That's our concern, as it is with you. So we get that. And so that might be, I don't know if the way that I explained it is helpful to maybe to frame a recommendation or not.
I share some of the confusion here as well, because I had always understood SFAP to be orthogonal to USCDI, and I feel like we're conflating a little bit by referring to USCDI version, where I don't think SFAP was intended to talk about USCDI version. It really, and I just pulled up the ONC page here, very specifically talks about the fact that it enables help IT developers to voluntarily use a more advanced version of the standard or implementation specification, not anything related to USCDI or USCDI version, which I think is a very, very different thing. And so I feel like that point is still a little muddy here.
So Ricky, when we publish USCDI in July, it will be considered for the version 2 of USCDI will be considered during this current SFAP cycle, so that developers can voluntarily update their systems to USCDI based on the criteria that use the certification criteria that use USCDI and provide that update to their customers.
Got it. That's a helpful clarification. Thanks. And it sounds like that might be where some of the confusion is. I don't see that clearly coming across in the public information on the SFAP site.
Okay. as we enter that comment period, which will coincide with the publication of USCDI version 2, we can make sure that we make that clear that specifically USCDI consideration, and then what does that mean if we accept USCDI version 2 as an SFAP approved standard? We can definitely take care of that as far as the communication piece goes.
And I think that Leslie's suggestion to add the cadence component to it, because there is a time lag between USCDI, July-ish, and SFAP, December, January-ish, is that creates then some forecasting or some did we get everything in play, because SFAP in the end ties it all together. Does that work? And will that get rapid adoption or not?
Hans et al., do you think that it would be helpful for us to include that recommendation here in our the feedback we're going to send to High Tech this time around? Is this of sufficient import that it goes in now, or do we keep it for our task 3 and further discussion?
I think with the comment that Leslie made and the suggestion to put cadence in the other one, I think this being part of commentary, I think ties us together on what the areas are where we need clarification, recognize that we're all trying to still figure out how this puzzle is being pulled together.
Okay, so column 3, not column 4.
Right.
I'm being very, very practical here. And I'm not sure that my comment, this one above, I'll just scroll up a tiny bit, I'm not sure this is really that valuable. I think that this maybe goes without saying. Should I delete this highlighted text here?
The first one that you highlight with
yes.
In red?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, the first one there.
Yeah, I think that's, I'm looking at Sasha, but I think that's pretty clear already.
Yeah, people know this. Okay. Anyone? No objection. I'm going to delete this. So we'll keep Leslie's comment.
Yeah, just as a general notice that if you're new to the game and you come in with a new SFAP, I don't believe that you need to support the older version. That has been a comment, but you don't have to at this point in time support an older version if that's the first time you enter the market.
You're talking about new certification, Hans?
Our understanding is that if you have certification 2015 QRS update now, as it currently exists, and then SFAP is going to put in version next of a particular standard. If you come in and have never been certified before, but you come in and you opt to immediately go for the now available SFAP and therefore the latest version, you don't have to go back and support the older version that was in the base certification component.
You're saying you don't have to be backwards compatible, essentially.
Well, so I think a better way to say it, Stephen, would be to say that if you have not yet updated to the QRS update, and USCDI version 2 comes out in March timeframe 2022, new certification, you can opt to update to USCDI version 2 instead of USCDI version 1, which was required under the QRS update.
But I think what Hans is saying, not update, Hans is saying you come with a fresh product. It's never been certified before. And it's after USCDI version 2 has been added to SFAP that you can certify your product on USCDI version 2 and its associated requirements and not be required to be backwards compatible with systems that are only certified to USCDI version 1.
I'm not sure you're backwards compatible, but you can, if you have a new certification, you can certify to version 2 as long as you certify, you submit for certification after March timeframe of 2022, assuming we add it to the SFAP process.
All right. I think we're saying the same thing.
So the recommendation is that certification should encourage currency, you know, it should encourage adoption of newest and greatest versions. That makes no sense, but it's not backwards compatible, it's really being forward compatible.
I think there's one important point there. I agree with, this is Ricky, I agree with the general approach that, and it seems pretty clear based on the published FVAP guidelines that you're allowed to certify against something that's newer, that seems reasonable. I think there's a reality though that in the market, if you have just a few that are certified to a newer standard, but it's not, it hasn't actually been implemented at scale by application developers, for example, it may not be that useful in the real world, although it certainly is on the leading edge of adoption. And so I think there's a pragmatic decision that they have to make in terms of how much they want it to be used versus how much they want to be on the leading edge. But either way, I think, you know, the goal is to get people to catch up.
And right, frankly, I don't think that this is...
Versus the certification decision, right? That's the organization coming in and saying, hey, I'm going to develop a product using the most current standards and innovate with that. And that's a business decision versus a certification decision.
Correct.
Right? Okay.
I also think it's worth pointing out that this whole discussion, while incredibly interesting, does not necessarily bear directly on our task with regard to advancing USCDI. I mean, it sort of goes to how does USCDI fit into the larger ONC process. So I think it's a valuable discussion, but I don't think we need to, it's not going to drive recommendations as far as I can tell. So, no hands up. We actually came to the bottom of column 3 and our task 2C recommendations, and there's no blood on the floor, I'm happy to say. So I want to thank all of you for engaging in this really, really rich discussion. We do have just a little bit of time before public comment, a few minutes. Does anyone have anything else they want to add as we turn our attention to the drafting or sort of the wordsmithing of these recommendations for the HITACH and the preparation of our presentation? In terms of timing here, our HITACH presentation is on the 9th. We certainly have the option of meeting next week to go over the final recommendations together here, and or we could do that via email. Does anyone would like to express a preference? I don't think there's a lot of value in us meeting on the 8th, the day before our HITACH presentation, because we will have already shared our materials with HITACH. I think we'll want to send it out probably by the 2nd of June. So question to the group, do you think a meeting next week is in order to go over how this gets instantiated into presentation materials, or are you comfortable doing that via email?
Steven?
Nobody is.
Mark?
Yes, Mark.
In my general approach is leave it on the calendar and you just cancel it if it's not needed, which is probably sounds like it's likely to be the case, but that way it's there if you and Leslie conclude that you want it.
I think that's a fine suggestion. Anyone want to add to that? Thank you, Grace. Grace is in. No objections? Good. Well, let's do that. And I think, you know, we clearly have our work cut out for us. We will, your co-chairs will continue to try to channel all of your joys and passions and concerns into our recommendations. If everybody's okay, let's go ahead to public comment. Thank you, Abby. And again, I really want to encourage any members of the public who are here to step forward and share your ideas with us. We haven't had a lot of public comment either in the chat or verbally at our prior meetings, but we certainly do encourage it.
Stephen, before we do that, can we just clarify? I think that your intent is to cancel the June 8th meeting.
No, our intent is to leave it the books and cancel it at the last minute if you and Leslie and I get our work done.
I mean the June 8th one.
Oh, I'm sorry. June 8th. Yes, I believe we can cancel June 8th. I don't think we need that one. I think we should probably come back together on June 15 and share the high-tech feedback and outcome, and maybe talk about our timeline and scope for version for task 3, if that's okay with folks. Thanks for your kind words, Abby. Okay, public comment.
Operator, can you open the line?
Yes, if you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments.
And I would just want to reflect back to the task force members, you know, the great thanks to all of you for your engagement. I know some of you have been more verbal than others, but I definitely appreciate that people have been here, they've been thinking, and have been part of this process.
There are no comments at this time.
All right. Well, with that, I think we are safe to end 15 minutes early, something I don't think this task force has ever done. And we will probably see you all on the 15th of June, if that is the case. Enjoy a few weeks of needed Tuesday morning time. And if we can get our work done and send you all timely presentation materials and transmittal document for your review, we will be able to cancel next week's meeting as well. So have a safe and wonderful day.